the Missouri State Journal, a weekly program keeping you in touch with Missouri State University.
Under rocks and logs, in burrows and underwater, Dr. Alicia Mathis finds fascinating creatures to study. Mathis, head of the biology department at Missouri State University, focuses her research on the behaviors of tiny amphibians and fish. I'm Nikki Donaldson. Mathis, head of the biology department at Missouri State University, is my guest today to talk about how the animals she studies communicate. One of the most common things these animals need to communicate about is predation risk. She elaborates.
When an animal is caught by a predator, its skin is going to be scratched just in the normal course of a predation event. And it turns out that the salamanders and the fish that we study as well have chemicals in their skin that get released during a predation event. And that chemical goes out into the water or on the ground or whatever. And other members of their species can detect that chemical and understand that there's a predation event going on, so there must be a predator nearby, and then they can take cover or run away.
It's been understood for a while that alarm cues are received and understood by animals of the same species and of different species. Imagine a minnow and a stickleback. But her lab has uncovered some surprising results.
We've done a couple of studies where we've taken it pretty far away from that. One study that one of my students, Kelsey Anderson, did recently showed that fish, small fish, darters, can detect the alarm cues of a salamander that coexists with them in their streams. And so that's across a class between fish and amphibians. And that's a pretty distant communication that's going on. Darters that coexist with the salamanders can detect their alarm cues. If darters don't coexist with the salamanders, they don't recognize the cue. So that was a really nice study for her master's thesis.
At Missouri State, she and undergraduate student Michael Lampe demonstrated that terrestrial salamanders can respond to alarm cues from earthworms, which is significant since they have similar predators. She says that this fear or flight response is part of the primitive part of the brain, which could have implications for many animals, including humans.
Learning about how animals respond to fear is something that might eventually tell us something about how the brain handles fright responses or stress, because these fright responses is a stress response. And stress is something that is very much on the minds of human researchers these days. For example, one of our former students who worked in my lab for a while is now working on his doctorate in Canada, and he's actually using fish as a model for post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is a very important topic in human medicine these days. So there may be actual biomedical implications for what we're learning.
There's also an environmental component to the research, she says. By studying these animals and their behaviors and environments, we can understand what threats and harmful contaminants might exist. She stresses that anything that could hurt a fish is probably not healthy for humans either.
The standard way for 100 years of testing for environmental contaminants has been to just determine what the lethal dosages were. That certainly tells us something interesting, but a lot of times these contaminants may have sublethal effects that could, in fact, increase mortality in the long run, but you wouldn't determine that with these standard toxicological tests. So by learning what animals do and what, in our case, how important chemical communication is to them. So we're talking about the nasal epithelium, which is very delicate tissue, which is easily damaged by pollutants. Since we know that, we can test to see whether pollutants in the environment affect the foraging behavior, reproductive behavior, anti-predator behavior. And in fact, one of my current students is looking at whether water that has been polluted by mine-related contaminants affects the anti-predator behavior of darters. And it does affect it quite profoundly, even though if you did a standard toxicological test, it wouldn't kill them outright. But in the end, they're going to find fewer prey. They're going to find fewer mates. They're going to get eaten by predators more often. And so that's going to lead to mortality, which, of course, has conservation implications, but also could potentially have implications for human health.
That was Dr. Alicia Mathis, head of the biology department at Missouri State University. I'm Nikki Donaldson for the Missouri State Journal.
For more information, contact the Office of University Communications at 417-836-6397. The Missouri State Journal is available online at ksmu.org.